You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and we're broadcasting from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. Right now, you're listening to The Real World. It's UBC Film Society's radio segment where we talk about all things film-related. We took a little break this summer, but we're so back, and we're so happy to be back.
Hell yeah.
I'm Lily, if you guys remember, and
I'm Emma, if you guys remember. If you don't, that's okay. We're here to remind you.
We are having a new time schedule this week. So not just this week, this entire year, actually. What I mean to say is we're weekly now. Last year, we were an every other week show. But we got a new slot. We're Wednesdays at 4 to 5. So if you tuned in for your regular show that is not The Real World, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. This is our slot now.
This is your new regular show.
This is your new regular show. And sorry to all you who tune in tomorrow on a Thursday, yeah. Because it's just not us anymore.
I know.
We kind of outgrew it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've moved on to Wednesdays, bigger and better things.
We have. So just before we jump into today's episode, I want to give a couple Film Sock updates. So Film Sock has a radio show, but we also do so many other film-related events. We've got various film screenings throughout the week and a lot more to do with films later on throughout the year. You're going to see our pub nights, our beer gardens, so many different things. And you can check those all out on our social media page. On Instagram, we post pretty much everything there. So that's UBC Film Society is the username on Instagram. You'll find it really easily. We also have a website if you want to check that out as well. So tomorrow, there's a screening. It's our first double feature of the year, I'm pretty sure.
I think so. Yeah, first or second.
And that's going to be tomorrow, Thursday at 6 p.m. for the screening of The Handmaiden 2016 and followed by Orlando 1992 at 8:30. So these are not in our normal theater location. They are actually in the Performance Theater, which is located in the UBC AMS Student Nest. So that's where you can find our double screening tomorrow. Like I said, we do double screenings usually once or twice a week. And we're going to have a bunch of other film-related events happening throughout the year. So stay tuned for that. Before we dive into today's topic, we're going to play you a couple ads because we know you love them. All right, we'll be right back.
If you're interested in maintaining a healthy lifestyle during midterms, finals, or any time throughout the year, then Freshy has you covered. Stop in today at Freshy on Westbrook Mall and order one burrito, salad, or bowl and get the second for free. Buy one, get one for free. Freshy on Westbrook Mall is your one-stop food as fuel choice for people on the move. Freshy. Eat. Energize.
What a lovely Vancouver summer night. I can't wait to sit by myself at the beach and look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is E-Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe. estudio.cafe.
Looking for an audioscape to put your mind at ease? Landscapes by Dune is a musical journey through sampling and field recording. From the busy streets of Toronto to BC's picturesque landscapes, the Belgian artist recorded an array of sounds during his travels across Canada. Landscapes will be released on Pop Guitari Records Bandcamp on December 8th and will be available on all streaming platforms on December 15th. For more information, check out at Dune as Dune on Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Harmonic hooligans, we're gonna be your three little music friends. Every second Thursday at 2 p.m., we're here for music time, CITR 101.9.
All right. Thanks for sticking around. Like we said, you are listening to The Real World, UBC Film Society's radio segment. And we're diving back in. If you didn't catch it, this is our first episode back from summer break, and we're so excited.
So excited to be back.
We've been watching so many movies.
Oh, yeah.
Just collecting them.
Yeah, we're so ready. We're coming in. You guys, no idea what's going to hit you.
No idea. So the topic we chose for this first episode is we wanted to talk about some summer releases just to start us off with that, because that's what we're coming fresh out of. But we know we're going to be talking about a couple of the big summer releases kind of around Oscar season episodes. Maybe we'll do like a year in review, a 2024 year in review of all the films that came out this year. But we thought that starting off, we're just going to shine some light on maybe a few that we won't get the chance to talk about again. And who knows, maybe there will be a chance to talk about them again. Maybe I'm underestimating. Maybe a lot of people saw these movies. Maybe you all saw all three of the films we're talking about. But if you didn't, the point of this is to talk about some smaller releases, some more indie films that you might have missed, and we think that you'll love. Because I really liked all three of them. We kind of, we picked them together, but I hadn't seen one of them. And anyway, once we had watched all of them, really all three of them are big favorites of mine for the summer.
Yeah, no, these were all like definitely highlights for this summer for me.
Also, we're hoping to start giving you guys a heads up on what we're talking about on our episode so that you can kind of watch before and we're not so worried about spoilers.
Exactly. We're giving you homework now. Homework for the show.
That's what it's come to. Big upgrades this year, guys. So let's start it off. We didn't give you that much of a heads up because it's our first episode back. Mm-hmm. But if you saw on our Instagram page, today we're going to be talking about three films. We're going to be talking about I Saw the TV Glow, I Used to Be Funny, and National Anthem. Let's kick it off with I Saw the TV Glow. You want to give a little bit of background? Because this was Emma's pick.
Yeah, absolutely. So I Saw the TV Glow is directed by Jane Schoenbrunn, whose name you might recognize if you're sort of familiar with the film We're All Going to the World's Fair. They sort of rose to prevalence with that. Now, this is kind of a, not quite a sequel, but a follow-up exploring like similar sort of ideas that follows these two teenagers, Maddie and Owen, who get really into this film, The Pink Opaque, when suddenly Maddie disappears and Owen is left to kind of deal with this aftermath of Maddie's disappearance and like just growing up.
The Pink Opaque, like what a name for a TV show.
I know.
I wanted to Google it and be like, where do I watch? Yeah. That would kind of look kind of creepy, but I read about it, obviously, like it's made up. But it sounds like Jane Schoenbrunn kind of made up this TV show, The Pink Opaque, inspired by some of their childhood favorite TV shows.
Yeah. I've heard it's very like, I've heard they've said that it's like inspired by Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I can't speak to because I haven't seen. Okay. But just what I do know about it, like in the cultural sphere, that seems to fit pretty aptly with The Pink Opaque.
Yeah. So Owen is played by Justice Smith, who for me is a familiar face from a couple things. I feel like that guy's been around a couple like young teen drama romances.
He's been kicking around.
But I hadn't seen Bridget Lundy Payne plays Maddie.
Yeah.
This is a new face to me.
I think I saw them in something else, but it's the name of what it was escapes me now. But they're very good. Yeah, they were very good in this. It was all so well acted. Like,
yeah,
incredible performances from both of the leads.
The young talent that Emma and I are about to skyrocket to like the peak of fame after this episode. Yeah. Like there's some great young talent that we're about to talk about today, and both of them were really great. But I think that's like a common theme throughout these three films, at least for me. Like I was just in awe of so many great performances.
No, absolutely. Like these were some insane heavy themes that these like young actors were dealing with, and they just played it with so much grace and so much poise. It's like it just feels like we're watching the start of, like, these careers that have the potential to be, like, sky high.
I know. We're really there right at the beginning.
Getting it on the ground floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I Saw the TV Glow was, I think, I saw it really early in summer. Like, it's so early. It almost feels like more of a spring watch. But it's just stuck with me, like, ever since I saw it. I think really, like, the theme of, like, kind of wanting to live this life that you feel like you've been promised in a way, or you've been told that you will like step into and inherit, and then as your life plays out, realizing that it's not at all that, and like you're just wasting away in this grim reality, just feels really like pertinent right now. Mm-hmm. Like, especially as we're seeing this, like, sort of our generation like become adults and have to deal with the reality of like living in society, and it's like, oh, this is not at all like what the TV show said it would be.
I know that's so true. Absolutely. I feel like just a huge topics like being thrown at us in this movie, but like all through all these interesting metaphors and things like that. So the TV show, to me, and from also just like what I've read about how people are interpreting all of the metaphors that are used in the film. Mm-hmm. And obviously everyone's going to have a different take, like people are going to see different things from them.
Yeah.
But we have this major one of the media, like TV episodes, mm-hmm. as a metaphor for change. Like for me, at least, we've got this one great line that I like has got me thinking, was that age is like chapter skipping over on a DVD.
Yeah.
Which I just found so interesting, because episodes and like nostalgic watching back of media from your childhood are really like common things that are happening throughout the film. But then relating that to change and age, like in one's own life, I just found so interesting, and representing kind of like he goes back and watches different episodes from the Pink Opaque.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen this, he's like going back for rewatches at different ages.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of this disconnected feeling in that way, for me at least. And I think that that shines through a lot in the pace and editing as well in the film.
Yeah.
Like you can feel that something's out of kilter. Like he's going back older, and he's going back to different episodes, and things aren't at this perfect balance that it felt like it was at when nothing was changing and everything was the same when he was younger. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Like the sense of discomfort that this film kind of creates, like through how it's edited, mm-hmm. feels very much like, yeah, like rewatching old shows that you used to love as a kid, and it's just not the same.
Yeah.
Like this sort of like, yeah, this little sense of something's wrong.
I know, and I was worried, like, am I doing something wrong? Am I, like, watching the film wrong? Because I'm a little bit confused. Like, the timing feels off, and there's points where I'm not following. But
yeah.
From what I understand, and, like, at least how I've settled my own discomfort, is that this is intentional.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a little, like, off-pace or something to feel off.
Yeah. Which is, I think it's really interesting how Schoenbrunn kind of plays with film in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've talked about how it's kind of a way of like queering the media, of like not quite following your typical like pacing or the typical way a story is presented,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really interesting. So we're seeing like in this episode three sort of like queer directors and how they tell these like stories on screen, or how their queerness translates into their art. And I think, yeah, like Schoenbrunn is really doing some super interesting things around that in mm-hmm. this movie.
Absolutely. And then they also list like some of the parts that feel disconnected in the film. And I was like, oh, my God. Like that's when it really came all together mm-hmm. for me. We have the main characters and they're sitting in the bar, and Maddie's like explaining things to Owen.
Yeah.
Explaining how they're connected to the show is mm-hmm. their childhood show is more than he initially thought.
Yeah.
That he was connected to the show. Sorry, like without trying to give away too much, but that's basically where we're at. The show clearly means a lot to both of them, this childhood show, but there's something there that he didn't realize how connected he really was.
Yeah.
And Maddie's there explaining, saying, did you ever feel like you couldn't distinguish between the show and reality, or monitoring time, like all mushed together and your memories were shaken up and combined, and feeling like you're narrating your own life like you're in a TV show? And then I was like, oh my God, these are all of the factors that had me feeling confused. No wonder this guy's confused.
Yeah.
That was like a point where it really all came together, like that explanation to the character. Obviously, it's an explanation to us, too, because we're kind of seeing it from Owen's perspective. And yeah, time is all screwy and memories are all shaken up.
Yeah. No, it's definitely that scene is like so pivotal to the understanding of the film, but I think it's so well done. I love everything about it, just from like the way it's lit to how the characters like deliver information to the audience.
I was going
to
ask what you thought about just like the visuals of that scene, the lighting, but anything really.
I think Sean Byrne just has like such a vivid like vision for what this film is like should be, and it's executed so well in this like kind of like sickly bright way that just feels like
neon.
Oh god, the neon, the use of neon in this is just so beyond. It's so cool. Yeah, this is just like visually such a stunning film.
I didn't know I needed it.
I know.
I haven't seen good neon in a while.
Exactly. Bring back good neon, guys.
Yeah, like, actually make it a trend in 2025. Yeah, honestly the neon was really cool, and it I think that was also what made that weird balance so unbalanced between reality and imaginaries for the character and for us was this lighting. Like, it felt like TV light.
Yeah.
And that just, like, seeps through in every which way, not just when he's sitting in the living room watching the TV, but anything. Like, when there were performers on the stage and there were, like, the spotlights on them, anything really. Music. Okay, so performers on the stage. I'm thinking lighting, I'm thinking music. Music was a huge role in this as well.
God, yeah. The soundtrack was crazy.
Okay, you know so much more about music and stuff than me. Can you explain a bit, like, the significance about the soundtrack? Because I heard people going crazy. Like, what do you know about it?
I think it's honestly just, like, how many big-name musicians they were able to score for this. Like,
I love it.
Like, Phoebe Bridgers and, like, Caroline Polkachek. And, like, this is, like, that's crazy. And then even to have, like, Alex G doing the score on top of that, like, there's just so much talent rattling around musically that it's just like, and I think the soundtrack is so like essential to this film. It really like, it really feels like a part of it.
Yeah,
well, obviously it's part of it, but like it really feels like the core of it is found in the soundtrack.
These are the times where I wish that I didn't watch this on my computer last night in bed. I wish I was in the theater, and I always wish I was in the theater, but boy, like, you saw it in the theater, right?
I did see it in the theater.
Oh,
it was
so jealous.
Insane in a theater. God, hearing these songs, like, yes, sitting in a theater was just, like, the perfect way to experience this.
Yeah, let's normalize 75% of film budgets on soundtracks.
Yeah.
Please.
Like, I don't care how the film looks. Just if you get, like, a crazy soundtrack, I'm set.
I don't think it's too much to ask.
No, this is reasonable.
Okay, I'm glad we decided on that. Okay, I want to get more into, like, the music of that film anyway, because I just hear people raving about it, and I need to look up some of these artists.
Oh,
I feel out of the loop.
You gotta get into it. This is, like, your gateway.
Oh, it's gotta be. And then how did you feel about the ending? Because that's what I'm still kind of, like, murky about, but I guess that that's obvious, is that it doesn't tie up in a nice, happy manner, that they're like, oh, it's actually really easy to grapple with reality and imaginary. Like, obviously, that can't happen. But how are you feeling about it?
I think it was one of those things where, like, the movie ended, and the credits were rolling, and I was still just sitting in the theater. Like, I was like, oh, my God. Like, this is, I have, like, so much to, like, think about. It took me, like, days to digest it afterwards. So I think I find it cut at a really good spot. Like, sometimes with the, like, cliffhanger-y endings like that, or ones where they aren't fully resolved, it can feel like they just stopped telling a story. It's like, oh, but I have so many questions. Like, with this one, it's like, I have questions, but I almost don't want them to be answered. Like, I'm kind of afraid of what the answers might be. And by leaving us in this place of kind of, like, almost despair, it's like, it just feels like, I don't know, you leave with such, like, an empty feeling. It's like, oh my God, like, just such a haunting way to end the film, I think, especially after there's a sequence at the end. I won't say too much, but it's so visceral, where one of the main characters, he's working and he's just like, there's a birthday party happening, he starts screaming, and it's just it's, oh my God, like, I genuinely think about that scene like once a week. It is so haunting, but I think it's just the way it ended was so perfect for the film, I think.
You think it was perfect? Okay.
I do.
I got to think about it more. You have to respect that I'm on day one of digestion.
Oh, yeah. No, you got to. This is like something you got to sit for like 2 weeks. It's got to ferment for a bit.
Yes. Yeah, I did. Like, I mean, I did not like the ending at all. And those final scenes like really drove home some major themes for me. Like back to the beginning grounds us with questions of truth and reality mm-hmm. and identity and like just drives home the uncertainty of it all.
Yeah.
Right. Like we talked about how he was connected to this show in a way that he didn't know. And mm-hmm. I don't think that that's given anything away. Like it's just true. And so when he returns to the show and he's trying to kind of revisit.
Yeah.
And he realizes as he changed, the show changed too. Like it's not the same that as he remembered.
It's spooky.
And while it's still inside of him. Mm-hmm. It's different. Like it's never going to be the same returning to this original state that might have been so easy and so comfortable when you were younger. It's never going to be as perfect as it was, which was like a really important message for me because I think like we've all connected to a piece of media, like a movie or a TV show that in our mind, it's just this certain up on a pedestal, like best thing mm-hmm. ever. And it can always be that best thing, but returning to it will never quite feel the same as like what it meant to you.
Yeah.
At any stage in your life, really. It doesn't have to be like your childhood. It could be like what something meant to you in your 20s or whatever.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
It was great. Well, do you want to jump into the song that you picked from the soundtrack to play for our listeners?
Absolutely. So the song that you're going to hear in a few seconds is Psychic Wound by King Woman from the scene in the bar that we talked about earlier.
Let's give it a go. Oh, that was Psychic Wound. Thanks for that great song choice, Emma.
Yeah.
That was from the movie I Saw the TV Glow. If you missed our last little segment, that's what we were chatting about. But we're moving on to our next smaller release film of the summer. And we want to talk about I Used to Be Funny. So this was directed and written by Ali Pankew. Did I say that?
You did.
Right. All right. Perfect. And then it had Rachel Sennett as Sam Cowell and Olga Petza as Brooke Renner. And then some other great performances as well. But these were our main two. I think I just heard about it because I'm obsessed with Rachel Sennett.
Oh, me too. Okay. I adore her. Everything she does.
Perfect.
She's like, every time she's in something, I am seated. She will bring me to a theater every time.
Yes. Absolutely. So I was very excited about this one because I just think she's so funny. I think that's not a unique opinion, but also a lot of people are going into this like maybe thinking that it was going to be kind of like some of her other, like she just had Bottoms, which was very funny.
So funny. Easy like movie of the year for me last year. That was so good. Oh my God. Comedy of the year, if nothing else. That was incredible. One of my favorite movies.
So this was like an interesting switch up, I guess. And don't get me wrong, I Used to Be Funny. It did like have balance for sure, but it's a tricky balance because they're balancing a really tough topic with humor as well. So just brief plot. Sam, Rachel Sennett's character, is a stand-up comedian struggling with PTSD and is weighing whether or not to join the search for a missing teenage girl, Brooke, that she used to nanny. Okay. Hopefully you're following that, because the film also jumps back and forth. The structure of it is leaping back and forth. So it's going back to her meeting the girl, starting to nanny this young girl, Brooke, who's a teenager, who is also suffering from the loss of her mother.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of heavy topics there. And then it's also going forward and you're seeing Sam, like, in real time, her clearly dealing with PTSD and estranged from her relationship with Brooke, which was complicated on purpose, I guess, but a little hard to follow at some points, I guess, until I understood what was going on. But that was kind of the structure of it.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Oh, yeah. I think you nailed that.
But it was kind of, like, shocking to see them, because you go back and you see them building this really nice foundation for a relationship, Sam and the girl that she's starting to nanny and help, hopefully, through the loss of her mom. And then going forward and seeing how their relationship has clearly gone so downhill, and then slowly the film will reveal like why that happened, which for me it felt like we were waiting a long time for the reveal of what led to the downhill relationship that they eventually had. But I don't know, did you feel like it was coming too late? Or
I think I liked how late everything happened in the film. I really liked how they sort of took their time like unraveling everything that's happened, didn't just give it all to us right out the bat. I think that was really like what helped make this film really good for me.
Okay.
Was how it kind of like slowly unraveled. I kind of like how we just deal in like implication for most of the film.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, I feel like I understood like through the implication, like, oh yeah, this is like likely something that's happened. Then we actually find out what's happened. It's like, okay, that's like pretty close.
Absolutely. I figured. It kind of was like the point of this film is not talking about the specific trauma that happened and the events that went down. They could make a movie about that easily, obviously. They could just dive right into the major conflict. And then they could also make one about the resolution. But neither of those things were the focus. The focus was spending time examining Sam's character, experiencing the aftermath trauma, like the PTSD that comes from that major conflict, and the resolution coming in right at the very end, maybe a little bit rushed, but also maybe not, because that just wasn't the focus of the film. So I don't know, maybe that's fine.
Yeah, I really liked kind of where the director chose to focus on, like, Sam's journey, like this specific point, because I know she's kind of spoken about wanting to show how recovery doesn't hinge on revenge with an axe. In some interviews, she said similar
recovery
things.
Doesn't Can you say it again?
Recovery doesn't hinge on revenge with an axe.
Oh.
Which is a very interesting way of looking at it, I think, like a perspective that we don't see as much in these sorts of films. And I'm really glad that, like, Ali Pankew, like, took the space to try and create this. I think, like, Rachel Sennett just, like, absolutely kills it, like, in this role. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know, like, I feel like her traumatic ability just isn't recognized enough. Like,
her traumatic.
Because she's so funny, but then she's, like, she's just got so much happening. Like, she's such, like, her face, like, when she acts is so expressive.
The eyes, everything.
Oh, my gosh. Like, I mean, I guess when we think back, like, she kind of got her start with, like, Shiva Baby, which is, like, this kind of dramatic role.
Yeah.
And I really hope we get to see more of that, because I think it is, like, she is really talented.
Absolutely. So, because her character is, like, put in these really depressing states of stress and just not being able to work. That's the point. This is a comedian who doesn't feel funny anymore, like, is out of work and not able to do what they love, not able to perform their passion, their artistic way of expressing themselves. But not only that, she's not, like, getting out of bed. She's not leaving her apartment and just can't find motivation after the trauma she's experienced and what's gone down between her and the girl that she used to nanny as well, just, like, losing that relationship as well. So there's so much there, and I think she just does an incredible job, even in these scenes where she's just in the tiny four corners of her room.
Yeah.
And her roommates are coming in and out of the room trying to, like, beg her to come out.
Yeah.
But still, we get, like, a really powerful and touching performance from her, even if she's not even getting up out of bed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, she delivers every single time, like, with her acting ability.
And I like that they didn't leave out those side characters. Like, what did you think about the roommates?
I thought they were, like, really good. I thought they were
I liked it, too.
Really fun.
I mean, I just thought that it was so organic between all of them, and I really, like, bought into it. I believe that they were roommates. Like, they just had this great organic banter, and it all felt really natural. And diving in, it wasn't, like, leaving out those peripheral characters of, like, where are your friends and family when you're going through something traumatic and, like, experiencing PTSD. Blocking them out.
Yeah.
Like, what does that look like? And them trying to, like, break down those walls as well and get back in. What does that look like? And I like that they had that, even though they were not central characters of, like, the main conflict of the film.
Yeah.
Relentlessly, they were coming into her room, though, things like that. And I thought those relationships were really, really great. Like, the other family, like, Brooke's family, they didn't really, like, stand out to me. Like, there was an aunt and her father, and I don't know, like, nothing against their performance. Like, I won't bring down their acting career single-handedly right now on The Real World. But they just didn't really stand out to me. Those relationships, like, I don't know.
Yeah, they just felt a bit, like, less constructed, I guess, than the ones she has with, like, her roommate or, like, her ex. I think, like, that's there's, like, really compelling stuff happening there that isn't sometimes with members of Brooke's family.
The ex got on my nerves, but you can also see, like, where that's coming from, just feeling so blocked out and not relevant in someone's life. Like, they don't even want your comfort. They don't even want you there to help them solve the problem. Like, that's how irrelevant you are to the issue.
Yeah.
So that you can see, like, the hurt in his eyes, and I do feel I feel that. Yeah. I thought that he gave, like, a good performance as well, but he also just, like, was a little bit annoying.
Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. I think, yeah, like, how they depicted all these different relationships was really well done.
Mm-hmm. And then we also have, like, the court scenes.
Yeah.
So it's, like, flashing through she's taking legal action against the trauma that she's experienced with this family.
Yeah.
And they're using her own work against her.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the ethics of that, obviously.
Yeah, no, that was really interesting to, like, see it play out, like, how they were, like, using her own jokes against her.
I know, it just makes me think about, like, being in the public eye. Like, I don't know if I could handle it in the way that, like, anything that anyone says, like, a famous actor, comedian, any artist, like, is just so, like, it makes you so vulnerable.
Yeah.
In that people can twist and turn it to use it against you. That really freaked me out.
Yeah. Like, just seeing how essential context is and like this sort of like a lot of art was really like, yeah, it was really crazy to see that play out.
Do you have any thoughts on this soundtrack? I know you had some on the last.
Oh, this soundtrack is another like crazy stacked soundtrack. Phoebe Bridgers is back again. Get in that
Thank
bag
God.
This summer. God. But like, who else did they have? They had Adrian Lenker. They had Muna. And the director was actually dating the singer of Muna for a period. Which is...
Wait, I think I saw that.
Yeah.
But then they're not dating
anymore. No, they're not together anymore.
The song stayed, though.
The song did stay.
Wow.
I know. But I know, like, the director has kind of spoken about how she wanted the soundtrack to feel like it was curated by two young women. And I definitely see that sort of, like, college age, like, two girls just, like, sitting in, like, their apartment. Like, yeah.
Wait, I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's give a listen. So which one did you pick for today?
I picked Half Return by Adrian Lenker, which plays at a moment in Sam's life where she's kind of at a bit of a crossroads and like with her relationship with Brooke and all this sort of stuff. Lots of complicated emotions happening in this scene.
Mm. All right, here we have it. Half Return, Adrian Lenker. Oh, what a good choice.
Thank you.
Like, I love
Adrian
that.
Lenker is always the right choice.
A special guest from last year, Mia, also is a huge Adrian Lenker fan and would like to say something about Adrian Lenker. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Hey, guys. I don't know if this is okay, it's on. Louis, tell me it's on. I just came at a timely time. Emma's selection from that movie was a great sound choice. I love Adrian Lenker, and I actually just forced Lily to listen to this entire album coincidentally a couple days ago in our kitchen.
So perfect. I'm so glad we've got a resident Lenker expert in the house today.
Serendipitous.
It's just perfect. All right, we're going to add a new segment where we quiz you on every film we've ever talked about on this show at very high stakes.
Yeah, okay, I'm ready.
Okay, perfect.
Throw it at me. Have I seen half of them? Not even. I'm ready, though.
Okay, anyway, we're not doing that. No quizzing Mia. We'll bring her back when she's more prepared. But we are talking about National Anthem, and that is our third and final one of the episode. This is directed by Luke Guilford. Debut feature. Shout out to Luke.
Oh, shout out Luke.
Yeah, God. Actually, shout out to that guy. He's a photographer, I'm pretty sure, but also... turn filmmaker. I don't really know much about him. It's his debut. We're waiting. This is another one of our young talents that we've scouted to shout out on this episode. But he was really great for a debut feature. Like,
oh my god, yeah.
Proud of that guy.
Look at him go. Can't wait to see what he does next.
Similarly to the last film where I was like, oh, Rachel Sennett's in it, I guess I'll watch it. I saw that Charlie Plummer was in this one, who might be like my crush or something because I'm so obsessed with his performance in this too. I've seen him in like not even that many other things, but when it popped up on my feed, I think I follow him on Instagram or something. And then I saw that he was in this, and that's how I heard about it. Have you seen him or Eve Lindley, who plays Skye? These are our two leads of this film. Have you seen them in anything?
I have seen them in nothing. I had no idea who Charlie Plummer was.
Okay, perfect. Fresh eyes.
Yeah.
What do you think about the performances? Let's get right into it.
Crazy. Again, this young talent. Like, we are absolutely rife with it. This is crazy.
What a time to be alive.
I know. I love talented young actors. I love when they do good things.
Seriously.
And this was a great little week for talented young actors. Like, yeah, no, he was incredible in this. Both of their performances were incredible. What's the actress's name?
Eve Lindley.
Eve Lindley was
Skye.
Oh.
And Charlie Plummer was Dylan. These are our two characters. Just quick plot summary, just to catch everyone up. We're all on the same page. Dylan is a 21-year-old construction worker in rural New Mexico, and he joins a community of queer ranchers and rodeo performers in search of their own version of the American dream.
Hell yeah.
That also just hooked me, like, once I read that.
Yeah.
What an interesting take on a Western, which we can dive into later. But I want to finish up on the performances, because we got to give him a couple more words of praise. What a vulnerable performance. This is Dylan's, like, coming-of-age story, pretty much, but I just think it's told so refreshing. Like, we've seen a lot of coming-of-age.
We have.
Lately, and it's hard to have a new take on that. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's getting, like, sometimes a little bit redundant.
Yeah.
But I think, for me, his character really subverts expectations of what coming-of-age in this specific context might look like. Mm-hmm. It explores identity and queerness and sexuality, not with like doubt and fear and trauma, but like with curiosity, which I just found so interesting because it's leaving room for hesitancy. And there's like an extreme delicacy in that balance, like of his confidence and curiosity, but also being a little bit hesitant, but just not interested at all in these super common obsessions with trauma and fear surrounding like coming into one's sexuality and identity in that way.
Oh yeah, especially like if you're thinking of it in the context of like sort of like rodeo, like, you know, you think of like the big one, obviously Brokeback Mountain, like that takes a very different approach to like queerness in the rodeo scene.
Yeah.
And I know like Luke Gilford kind of grew up like in and around the rodeo circuits. This is clearly like a very personal kind of film for him, and I feel like you really see that affinity like for this community and just how it's portrayed, like kind of the focus on all these characters, like when they go to like the queer rodeo and there's just like all these like shots of the audience and stuff, and it's just like queer people living their lives and like just this focus on the community that exists there already and that has like existed for a long time, will continue to exist, I think is like really important.
Yeah, and it's just so like embraced, and there's not like major conflict around that, which I found refreshing. There is obviously going to be conflict like in the film, which comes with, I think, a major point for me was Charlie Plummer's character coming. This is the beginning of his story, but he's coming in the middle of everyone else's story, which I found like very important to realize for me, and grappling with the fact that by the end of the film, he's closing in on the, he's coming to the end of his beginning of his journey and discovering himself and identity and finding where he fits in. But that doesn't mean that everyone else is not that it's like a race or anything, but like in a way further along than him. And he's coming in kind of midway through the episode for a lot of people. And in that way, his ending doesn't tie up perfectly with everyone else's because he's just not parallel. And I think that was like something I had to realize. He didn't fit like a puzzle piece with them.
Yeah.
He was able to discover himself, and this queer rodeo community was there for him at the right time. But like that is not going to last forever in the way that they've got established lives and established relationships.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, he's never going to be able to understand or infiltrate those relationships that have such big foundations.
Yeah.
Which I think is really important to this main relationship, which is between him and Evelyn Lee's character, Sky, who's mm-hmm. already in a relationship.
Yeah.
But Sky and Dylan have undeniable chemistry. Yeah. And that's where, like, part of the conflict comes from, is mm-hmm. they clearly have a lot of chemistry, which also is just another praise to their performances. I just think they're so great together.
Oh my god, yeah, they play off each other so well. Like, mm-hmm. just like, yeah, the chemistry is like palpable in every single scene that they share.
Absolutely. But at the end of the day, like, Sky is already in another relationship and has many, like, friendships and things going on in this mm-hmm. community already that Dylan's only just stepping in. He's looking, like, stepping through a window temporarily to be a part of it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, that might be all that's there to serve, is just to help him come to any realization in his own journey. Yeah. At least that's what I got from it.
No, definitely. I can definitely see that. Like, it's very much like he is able to kind of, like, partake in this specific, like, niche of the community for a moment, but, like, only a moment. He does have to go find himself outside of it. Like, his identity has kind of been, like, dug up, and, like, he kind of has a general sense of who he is, but now he really needs to go and, like, hone in on that.
Yeah.
And, like, figure out, like, what he values and, like, what he finds important, that sort of thing.
I love that. Like, I love the way it ended with mm-hmm. the end of his beginning and the start of the rest. And we don't get to see the rest, but, like, we know it's about to come his way. And mm-hmm. I just find that really an exciting ending for the film that we watch. Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. This was, like, definitely the push that sort of, like, gives him the mm-hmm. fire to keep going towards the future he wants, like, mm-hmm. to actually start living, it feels like.
What else do you think about, like, the portrayal of, like, typical Western tropes? Because, well, I know Brokeback Mountain is a favorite of yours. I'm not sure if, like, the genre as a whole is, like, a major spot for you.
I love gay cowboys. You put gay cowboys in anything and I'll watch it. It's, like,
perfect.
One of those little, like, mouse traps. You just put, like, gay cowboys in there, you've got me. You've got me every single time. But I think this one was really interesting because kind of you see this, like, how queerness and the sort of, like, hyper-masculine world of rodeo can intersect and create something, like, really beautiful out of that, and how the two can and, like, should coexist.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one should not be exclusive of the other. I think that was really, really well done. Like, clearly there's a lot of love and care for both of these communities from the director. Like, you can just see just how he, like, shoots everything. Because I know this was based off of a monograph of the same name. So it's like,
what of the same name?
It's like a book of photos, I think.
Oh.
Photos and essays, yeah.
Interesting.
So I know he's, like, already very, like, well versed in, like, depicting this community. So
cool.
It's interesting to see that he took the step to make a movie out of that. Like, clearly this subject matter means so much to him. He's like, yeah, monograph and a movie about it.
Let's keep going.
Yeah.
Perfect. Wow, yeah. And it's just beautiful. Like,
oh, yeah.
Every single shot.
Stunning.
Is gorgeous. Gosh, I'm just thinking about it now.
Mm-hmm.
That was great to see in the theater as well.
Oh, I wish I saw this in the theaters. We flipped from I saw the TV glow. I watched this on my computer.
Yes, exactly. Well, I just couldn't get enough of the costumes and, like, the makeup as well. The colors are great. And set in the desert, I think, like, that's what catches your eye. You're not used to seeing some of these things in the desert. The same way in a Western, like, at least I would expect to see desert isolation. Like, that's what we get in Brokeback Mountain, not to keep comparing it to that, but they're just, like, all alone.
Yeah.
Where this is the exact opposite of coming from alone and finding you're together and realizing there's a great line in the film, actually, where Carrie, another really great performance, this was... Okay, Mason Alexander Park as Carrie, by the way, just highlighting another really touching point, is explaining to him that it's not that you, like, never fit in. Like, you fit perfectly in. You just hadn't found your people yet. You hadn't found where your in is.
Yeah.
And I think that just really drives home the fact that we're not taking the route of the desert and Western isolation. Yeah. We're taking the route of chosen family and community, which is another way that I think it also really supports expectations, which I really, really liked. Because, like, gosh, together in the desert is something I never thought would be so beautiful. Like, the rodeo scenes where they're all dressed in tutus and dresses and things like that. Just loved those scenes.
Oh, yeah. They were so beautifully shot. Like, any sort of scene where there's just a group of people just has such, like, direction, like, flow in it that you just never see in these Westerns. Like, you just get, like, oh, you know, lonely cowboy.
Lonely cowboy.
Like, forever on his own.
Harsh environment. Yeah. The wind's blowing. And, like, the environment does have its issues. Like, there's desert storms and things that happen. But also, like, the beauty of it's really emphasized as well in the film, which I love. Love, 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 love. Any final points? Any notes on soundtrack?
Again, another crazy soundtrack. This has been great. Like, every time a song played, this is like, oh my God, I love that song. So, another awesome soundtrack. My personal highlight favorite from this soundtrack was Common Burn by Mazzy Star, because I love Mazzy Star.
So, oh my God.
I will never not hype up Mazzy Star.
All right, let's listen to it. This is Common Burn, Mazzy Star. We got it from National Anthem. I guess you probably already knew the song.
Anyway. Yeah, but you know, it's nice to hear it again.
All right, here we go. Oh, thanks for tuning in, guys. That was The Real World. We're on every Wednesday from 4 to 5. Don't miss us.
Don't miss us. We'll miss you.
We'll miss you, but we'll be back in 1 week, and we'll give you a heads up on what we're going to be talking about. So check on UBC Film Society's Instagram.
Get ready to watch.
Alrighty. See you next week.